Welcome to another episode of PH Deepinem, Beyond the Lab. Today we explore the fascinating world of cancer treatments, from traditional therapies to cutting-edge innovations. I'm Luca, a cancer biology researcher from the University of Bologna, and with me are Michelangelo, Lucia, Ilaria, and Alessandro. We are five PhD students, three oncology researchers, a neuroscience researcher, and one medical doctor.
Today, we'll take you on a journey through cancer treatment, starting from chemotherapy, moving through side effects like neuropathy and myasthenia gravis, and arriving at exciting new options like CAR T-cell therapy, still with consequences, and cancer vaccines.
Cancer is a group of over 100 diseases, all involving uncontrolled cell growth. These cells often ignore signals that would normally stop division or lead to cell death. Cancer begins when normal cells accumulate a genetic mutation. Instead of being silent or irrelevant, these DNA changes turn the cells into malignant ones, able to grow uncontrollably, invade nearby tissue, and eventually spread to other parts of the body. In most cases, just 3 or 4 mutations in genes that control the cell cycle or the apoptosis, the cell programmed death system, are enough to start the process toward cancer development. Molecules such as P53, KRAS, and PIK3CA are usually altered in cancer patients. The mutations usually compromise the physiological function and, in advanced phases, boost the proliferation and the metastasis of the tumor. Our immune system constantly scans for these abnormal cells by recognizing specific proteins, or antigens, on the surface. Some of these mutated cancer proteins, known as neoantigens, are unique to tumor cells and don't appear in healthy tissues. This makes them promising targets for immunotherapy. However, cancer cells can sometimes mimic the body's own proteins, called self-antigens, which makes it harder for the immune system to attack them without causing collateral damage. This is a part of what's called immune tolerance.
And even though many cancers are curable when caught early, early-stage tumors usually produce very low levels of detectable biomarkers. That makes early diagnosis difficult, often leading to late detection and reduced chances of recovery. Traditional treatments like chemo and radiotherapy have represented the foundation of cancer therapy for decades. They target fast-dividing cancer cells with the goal to eradicate the malignancy. However, these first-line therapies frequently come with collateral damage on normal tissues, a phenomenon often referred to as the fratricide effect.
Due to their non-specific action, chemotherapy and radiotherapy often lead to a spectrum of adverse effects, spanning from moderate to more serious ones. Transient discomfort like fatigue and nausea are usually manageable. However, more severe complications such as myelosuppression or cardiotoxicity undermine patients' quality of life and can also limit the intensity and duration of oncologic regimens. You've probably heard about the major chemo side effects, but there are other complications that often slip under the radar. Let's dive into that.
For example, one less recognized but very impactful side effect is chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy, or CIPN. By inflicting damage on the peripheral nerves, those that lie beyond the brain and spinal cord, drugs such as platinum compounds, taxanes, and vinca alkaloids can evoke a constellation of sensory and motor disturbances. Affected patients often report persistent tingling or a pins and needles sensation, numbness in their extremities, and sudden electric jolts. In severe cases, proprioceptive deficits may impair gait and balance, significantly undermining quality of life. A key feature of CIPN, although these previous symptoms refer to a function of large fibers of nerves, is its involvement of small nerve fibers, which are responsible for temperature and pain sensitivity and the proper functioning of the autonomic vegetative nervous system. Such small fiber neuropathy, therefore, is responsible for potentially severe symptoms, such as difficult to treat neuropathic pain or potentially disabling dysautonomia. Its onset can be acute or progressive, and in many patients, CIPN can persist months or years after treatment has concluded, significantly impacting function and quality of life. As per small fibers, tests for their function and damage are possible, but require expert personnel and specific equipment when compared to more classical techniques such as electromyography. For instance, skin biopsy can assess small fiber morphology, while tests such as quantitative sensory testing, QST, or pseudomotor analysis can analyze in vivo function of sensory and autonomic small fibers. Although CIPN occasionally resolves over time, it can become chronic and dose-limiting, forcing oncologists to adjust or discontinue life-saving chemotherapy regimens.
Is there any strategy available to prevent or minimize CIPN before it starts? Can it be reversed?
Well, chemotherapy-induced peripheral neuropathy often persists for months or even years after treatment ends, disrupting daily activities, impairing mobility, and taking a significant toll on mental well-being. Despite its profound impact, truly effective therapies remain scarce, and full reversal of nerve damage is rarely achieved. More effort is needed to understand the exact pathophysiology of CIPN.
Over the past decade, a revolutionary approach has emerged: immunotherapy. Rather than directly attacking cancer, it empowers the body's immune system to do the job.
Checkpoint inhibitors like anti-PD-1 or anti-CTLA-4 remove the brakes that tumors place on immune cells. This allows T cells to recognize and destroy cancer. However, efforts to improve the specificity of action of T cells on cancer cells have led to a revolution, especially when speaking of oncohematologic malignancies. Let's talk about the new frontiers in cancer immunotherapy.
Among the most promising advances is CAR T cell therapy, a form of adoptive cell transfer where a patient's T cells are genetically engineered in the lab to express chimeric antigen receptors, or CARs, that specifically target cancer cells' antigens. This process starts with collecting T cells through leukapheresis, followed by modifying these cells to recognize unique antigens in cancer cells, such as CD19 in certain leukemias and lymphomas. Once infused back into the patient, these CAR T cells multiply and act as a living drug, seeking out and killing cancer cells with high specificity. Despite its success, CAR T cell therapy faces challenges like severe toxicities and limited effectiveness in some solid tumors, driving ongoing research to enhance CAR design and combine therapies to overcome tumor microenvironment suppression. This cutting-edge approach exemplifies how immunotherapy is evolving to provide personalized and potent cancer treatments.
While CAR T cell therapy has shown remarkable success in targeting and eliminating certain cancers, what are the main safety concerns and side effects that patients and clinicians need to be aware of when using this powerful immunotherapy?
The main challenges and side effects of CAR T cell therapy include cytokine release syndrome, CRS, neurotoxicity, and immune system complications. CRS is the most common and serious side effect, caused by a massive release of cytokines as CAR T cells multiply and attack cancer cells. Symptoms range from high fever, chills, and fatigue to severe respiratory distress and organ failure, requiring close monitoring and sometimes treatment with immunosuppressive drugs like tocilizumab or steroids. Neurotoxicity, also known as immune effector cell-associated neurotoxicity, T syndrome, ICANS, can manifest as headaches, confusion, seizures, and speech difficulties, likely linked to immune activation and sometimes overlapping with CRS severity. Other challenges include off-target effects, where CAR T cells attack healthy cells, especially normal B cells, leading to prolonged B cells aplasia and increased infection risk due to weakened immunity.
That's a comprehensive overview of the risk. Thanks, Lucia. Given those safety concerns, are there any promising alternatives to CAR T cell therapy that researchers and clinicians are exploring to treat cancer more safely and effectively?
Yes. One of the most notable alternatives is TCR T cell therapy, or T cell receptor engineered T cell therapy. Unlike CAR T cells, which recognize antigens on the surface of cancer cells, TCR T cells are engineered to detect intracellular proteins presented by major histocompatibility complex, or MHC, molecules. This means they can target a wider range of cancer-associated antigens, including those not accessible by CARs.
So, MHC acts like a display system for what's happening inside the cell?
Exactly. MHC molecules on specific cells, called antigen-presenting cells, or APCs, take protein fragments from within the cell and present them on the surface. TCR T cells can then scan these fragments and recognize cancer-specific ones. TCR T cells are especially promising for solid tumors, even if this approach comes with a key limitation. MHC molecules are highly variable between individuals. This is known as MHC restriction. A TCR designed for one person's MHC type may not work in another.
So, while it opens a new therapeutic avenues, especially for solid tumors, it requires careful design and patient selection.
Right. And both CAR-T and TCR-T therapies continue to evolve. Researchers are actively refining these approaches to improve specificity, reduce toxicity, and expand their applicability to more patients and cancer types.
Let's get back now to checkpoint inhibitors like anti-PD-1 and anti-CTLA-4. They have revolutionized cancer treatment by reactivating the immune system. They also carry the risk of immune-related adverse effects. Can you shed light on any lesser known but serious autoimmune complications that can arise from these therapies, particularly the ones that differ in presentation from their classical forms?
Among immune-related side effects, a less commonly recognized but significant complication of checkpoint inhibitors such as anti-PD-1 or anti-CTLA-4 is represented by myasthenia gravis, MG, an autoimmune disorder causing muscle weakness and fatigability. Interestingly, myasthenia gravis induced by immune checkpoint inhibitors, ICIs, exhibits different features compared to the classical form of MG. Firstly, the onset of ICI-induced MG is typically rapid and acute, often developing within weeks of initiating immunotherapy, whereas classical MG usually progresses more gradually over months or years. Secondly, unlike classical MG, which is generally characterized by the production of antibodies against acetylcholine receptors or muscle-specific kinase, ICI-induced MG often presents with negative or low titers autoantibodies. This may suggest a different immunopathogenetic mechanism involving T-cell-mediated immune activation rather than the antibody-driven process seen in classical MG.
How are patients with ICI-induced myasthenia gravis treated compared to those with the classical form of the disease?
The response to treatment in ICI-induced MG can be challenging. While classical MG patients often improve with acetylcholinesterase inhibitors and immunosuppressive therapies, those with ICI-induced MG may require aggressive immunosuppression, including corticosteroids combined with intravenous immunoglobulins or plasma exchange, to achieve clinical improvement.
Let's talk about another big chunk of cancer immunotherapy, which is represented by vaccines. We already use them as a powerful tool to prevent cancer. Just think about HPV vaccines. But what if we could treat the malignancy with those? At its heart, a therapeutic cancer vaccine works by teaching the immune system to spot and attack the cancer. In a therapeutic cancer vaccine, we take proteins, viral vectors, or even mRNA encoding specific tumor antigens, and we inject them directly into the patient, usually into the skin or the muscle. Once inside the body, these antigens are picked up by antigen-presenting cells, especially by dendritic cells, which process the tumor markers and prime the patient's own T cells, teaching them to recognize and attack any cancer cells carrying those same antigens. We can also speed up the process by harvesting a patient's dendritic cells, exposing them to the tumor antigens in the lab, and then reinfusing those preloaded cells back into the patient. This way, the dendritic cells arrive already equipped to present the cancer targets.
Which would you say are the pros and the cons of these vaccines?
Well, therapeutic cancer vaccines really shine on safety. Unlike CAR T cells or checkpoint inhibitors, you almost never see those dramatic cytokine storms or autoimmune flares. In most cases, patients experience only mild flu-like side effects. And because the vaccine is designed around that individual's unique tumor antigens, you get a truly personalized treatment rather than a one-size-fits-all approach. On the downside, though, we are still chasing efficacy. Early studies have shown the immune system lights up nicely, but translating that into consistent, meaningful tumor shrinkage across larger groups remains a hurdle. In other words, safety and precision are already there. We just need to crank up the clinical impact.
That's great. Are there any specific cancers where these vaccines seem to be working better so far?
That's a great question. So far, the strongest clinical benefits were reached in malignancies characterized by well-defined tumor-associated antigens. For example, Sipuleucel-T was the first FDA-approved therapeutic cancer vaccine. Its targeting of prostatic acid phosphatase led to a sensible improvement of clinical outcomes in patients affected by metastatic prostate cancer. Melanoma has likewise been a fertile area of investigation, particularly with neoantigen-based peptide and mRNA constructs that exploit the high mutational burden of the tumor. This kind of therapy is being tested also in other clinical trials. What's exciting is the move toward multi-antigen formulations. Instead of one target, you present a constellation of tumor markers, which seem to broaden the T-cell response and make it harder for the tumor to escape from the immune system. Early data hint that this could lead to a deeper and longer-lasting remission.
But what about the challenges? Is it just a matter of making the vaccine stronger or are there roadblocks?
Both, actually. One major issue is that the tumors are sneaky. They can evolve and lose the antigens you're targeting, basically going invisible to the immune system. And the tumor microenvironment itself is often highly immunosuppressive, meaning even if you have trained T cells, they can get shut down as soon as they reach the tumor. For example, the expression of PD-L1, which stands for programmed death ligand 1, and the recruitment of regulatory T cells and suppressive myeloid cells are all mechanisms that the tumor puts up to dampen the immune attack. To overcome this, Researchers pair vaccines with checkpoint inhibitors so trained T cells aren't held back. They also add adjuvants like toll-like receptor or STING agonists to spark a stronger inflammatory response and try and rewire the tumor microenvironment by disarming or repurposing suppressive myeloid cells. This combination approach is all about educating the immune system and ensuring that it can sustain its activity upon encountering the tumor.
So, where are we today? Traditional treatments are still what they use to cancer treatments, which consist in a broad attack where the tumor cells are more sensitive to or are the center of the treatment. Moreover, chemotherapy and radiotherapy are still referred as the golden standards in clinical trials, in which new technologies are tested and are transforming the field. The main transformation is that the transition from an approach where the generalized or wide attack toward a new approaches that are tailored to be increasingly more precise to target the tumor cells and trained to spare the healthy ones.
We must not forget the patient experience. Innovation like CAR-T are powerful, but side effects like neuropathy or myasthenia gravis are real, and managing them is crucial.
The future lies in integrating biology, medicine, and technology, bringing personalized, effective, and less toxic treatments to the clinic.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. Science is moving fast, and we're excited to keep exploring it with you.
You've been listening to Beyond the Lab. Stay tuned for more science, more voices, and more stories.